When it comes to relationship counseling, one particular approach stands heads and tails above the rest. John Gottman's The 7 Principles for Making Marriage Work. This approach, outlined in a book by the same name, is the brainchild of a man who took a big risk, betting on a big reward, and he hit pay dirt. Back in the 1970s, while at the University of Illinois, John had an idea. He had grown tired of the non-scientific approach to relationship counseling, which was the only kind out there. John experienced frustration and disappointment trying to help couples improve relationships by teaching them speaker-listener skills and conflict resolution techniques. Now, I've never seen it in print, but I would bet that if I got a chance to talk to John in person, he would probably go on record as saying that all of the relational counseling strategies that he encountered back in the 70s were pretty lame. And I would wholeheartedly agree. The 3 times that I was in marriage counseling prior to my divorce were beyond lame. They were pathetic. And sadly, there are still many counselors who haven't discovered or who have ignored Gottman's work completely and still use some pretty lame techniques. John's idea was to approach the dynamics of relationships in a very scientific way. He was going to study them himself. Rather than finding out what made marriages tank and trying to eliminate those things, he was determined to find out what made good marriages good, and thus commenced his journey to put marriages under the microscope and find out once and for all what made the great ones great. Now, mind you, John had no idea what he would find. That is, if he found anything at all. He just had a pretty solid strategy and approach. Find out who is already doing it right, find a lot of those couples, and compare the commonalities. Not really rocket science, if you ask me. That approach has served mankind for millenniums, perhaps since the beginning of time. Don't go on hunches, good ideas, or observations. Go straight to the source. Those who have already figured it out. Elegantly simple in theory. So to achieve that purpose, John had to find a way to control and measure, as objectively as possible, the data he was attempting to extract and observe. His solution was the Love Lab, a bona fide laboratory in which to study couples doing what couples do. It was actually an apartment on the campus at the University of Washington in Seattle. He had the apartment rigged with cameras, only in the common areas, of course, microphones, and even what he called gigolometers, sensors in the couches and chairs that measure fidgeting, which is highly correlated with an amped-up sympathetic nervous system. He also made use of Holter monitors to measure heart rate, skin galvanometers to measure skin moisture responses associated with stress, and catheters to pull blood and urine samples as necessary to analyze for stress hormones. The objective was to be objective. He wasn't about to take someone's word for it. He wanted real data to verify levels of stress associated with the relationship itself, highly correlated with the relationship in trouble. And then he simply asked couples to be a couple. Talk about things you would normally talk about, as well as purposeful conversations about things that normally cause some degree of conflict. Behind the scenes, John devised some very clever ways to objectively measure some very subjective concepts, like differences in perception. I won't get into all of the details here, but suffice it to say, John was a scientist, and he went all out to scientifically measure something that had never been attempted, relationships. And John hit a home run. But he had to wait 30 years to trot around the bases and collect his high fives at home plate, because John couldn't say much of anything about his data until he had gotten many years into the project. He literally had to wait and see what happened to the relationships he studied. You can't say anything about the data until you can verify positive outcomes. That took guts, if you ask me. What if he couldn't pull it off? What if his methods yielded nothing or were inconclusive? But so is the nature of a great vision. You don't know. You take a big chance and you hang on tight. Now, many people have asked over the years, how accurate could this data possibly be? These couples knew they were being watched. John's answer is twofold. First, he pointed out that couples quickly forgot about the camera. And secondly, even if they didn't and were on their best behavior, you still have good data because you're comparing couples that were studied under the same conditions and looking for variances. Now, as a bit of an aside here, I can absolutely verify John's first contention that couples quickly forgot about the camera. When I did my practicum for my graduate degree, we had a camera in every counseling room and videotaped every session. The purpose of the camera was to be able to watch and critique our own performance with the professor and the rest of the class. And I can assure you that clients quickly forgot about the camera in the corner. And if that were not the case, and they were on their best behavior, then I shudder to think about what their worst behavior might have looked like. I'm positive most of them simply forgot. So I know exactly what John experienced in his lab. What John discovered in his longitudinal study has become the veritable holy grail of couples counseling. The principles he isolated were, admittedly, not exactly what he was suspecting. That is the brilliance of the project. A true scientist starts with a hypothesis and then does the experiment. Sometimes the result is far from expected. And in this case, there was a good measure of such. As John puts it, he did not set out to discover the myths of conventional couples counseling. It just sort of happened that way. For example, prior to John's work, much emphasis was placed on conflict resolution. The idea seemed logical, that if conflict decreased, quality of relationship should increase, right? And if conflict resolution skills and good communication styles could be learned, things should improve, right? One big problem, the data didn't support that at all. When John pored over the data, he found that even the best of couples, those who went the distance and were still happily married, just simply didn't do the very things that counselors had assumed would help. In the heat of battle, all those skills went right out the window. In other words, the happiest of couples could mix it up with the best of them. Another way of saying this is that there was not an appreciable statistical difference when it came to conflict and disagreement between couples who eventually divorced and those who maintained healthy and happy relationships to the end. So what the heck was up? Researchers were scratching their heads and poring over the data, wondering, I suppose, if their work had been in vain, when all of a sudden they noticed something interesting. It wasn't the sheer amount of conflict in a relationship that mattered. It was the ratio between conflict and positivity, or more specifically, positivity and negativity. What they discovered was that there was a very reliable ratio of positive interactions to negative ones, like conflict. That mattered the most. In couples who went the distance, and happily so, the ratio of positivity to negativity was 5-1 or greater. This was the bottom of the threshold. Even 4-1 didn't cut it. 5-1 was the lowest, and some happy couples clocked in at 20-1 or even higher. So what did all this mean? Simple. Every couple has conflict, disagreement, and negative interactions, surprisingly at about the same statistical rate across the boards. The big difference is the overwhelming positivity that drenched the great relationships. And it didn't matter if couples didn't really fight all that much, or so they thought. If the ratio wasn't 5-1 or higher, they were headed for problems. Positivity is the elixir for a happy relationship. It absorbs the negativity that just is, no matter how wonderful of a human being you strive to be. Creating positivity and keeping that ratio abnormally high was the ticket. And yes, I did say abnormally. Normal is a mathematical term meaning average or most. Most marriages these days end in divorce, a whopping 65%, which is actually a bit down from 68% a decade ago. So normal in the world of marriages means divorced. Abnormal means not normal, or in this case, staying married, and happily so. So being happily married is abnormal. I tell my clients all the time, you do not want a normal marriage. You already have one. What you're looking for is an extraordinary marriage, and that's going to take an extraordinary effort. Turns out that this 5-to-1 ratio was just the veritable tip of the iceberg, but a big tip nonetheless. This 5-to-1 ratio is just one of 7 principles that are absolutely vital to making a marriage work. Violate this ratio, and it's pretty much a guarantee that your marriage will be in peril. Gottman himself identifies 11 additional myths about marriage that he has discovered along the way. I won't bore you with all of the details here. You can look them up yourself, but I will share just one more with you. Most experts would be quick to agree that what couples fight about most is sex, money, and in-laws. False. Turns out that the one thing that couples fight about most is, wait for it, nothing. We fight most about abso-frickin-lutely nothing. Yep, now you're smiling, aren't you? It's so true. You don't even need science to verify that one. Now, I learned of Gottman's work back in graduate school in 1999, and 20 years later, I still use his principles to underpin my work. And guess what else happened to me back in 1999? I got married to my second wife, really my only wife. I joke about my 10-year practice marriage. And I can tell you that Gottman's principles are spot on. I will go as far as to say I owe my great marriage to a man I never even met, who was busy figuring out marriages while I was still playing Little League. A man who had a vision, hedged his bets, took the plunge, ignored all the naysayers, and knocked a home run completely out of the park. Over the past almost 2 decades of my life, I have been assimilating his work into my own marriage and into my own practice with amazing results. I love what he has done. So elegantly simple, but yet so profoundly rich and complex at the same time. There is nothing even remotely easy about solving the marriage problem. But with the right tools, based on scientifically proven principles, success is in the crosshairs. We just need to pull the trigger. And that brings me to my initiative, operationalizing these principles in the lives of my clients. Without an operational strategy and training and explaining and guiding and customizing, they remain principles. Great ones, but just principles. And principles don't change lives, actions do. And actions don't change until thoughts and beliefs change. Operationalizing Gottman's principles and making them actually happen, actualizing them, involves applying hard-hitting psychological principles that have also been scientifically proven to work. I'm talking about cognitive behavioral techniques and neuro-linguistic programming, CBT and NLP. Look them up if you're not familiar. Just type CBT or NLP into your browser and stand back. You will be blown away by the plethora of references, research studies, articles, reviews, abstracts, and courses that each of these has generated since their inception in the 1960s and 1970s, respectively. Let me close this introduction to my couple's work by saying this. I am one of those people who wants to know everything about something that I'm being asked to consider. Tell me where it came from, how it was derived, give me supporting evidence, and be willing and able to explain it in detail, or I don't want it. I assume that my clients think that way as well. My approach couldn't be any farther from the fluff that unfortunately so many couples therapists are still peddling. If you want someone to help you establish fault or referee your pissing contest, count me out. I won't waste your time, and I certainly won't allow you to waste mine either. If you want a better relationship, there are things to learn and one heck of a lot of practice in your future. It takes reprogramming, quite possibly your whole paradigm on relationships from the ground up. And best of all, you don't even have to come into my office. In fact, I don't really want you here. No disrespect intended, but I don't want to see you in person. Now, that may sound very strange to you at first, but hear me out on this. I've done more face-to-face couples counseling sessions than I can count. In the past 10 years, since I started my practice, I've conducted well north of 10,000 sessions. I think it's safe to say that at least a fourth of those have been couples. And I've learned a thing or two along the way. Couple sessions can be largely unproductive endeavors. Usually somebody is pissed off, doesn't want to be there, thinks this is bullshit. You probably know the drill. And even if I try and establish rules of engagement, they're largely ignored. It is uncomfortable, usually, for at least one participant, and half of what I say gets remembered. And once somebody airs out dirty laundry, it's all bets off. I become the referee and sometimes the bouncer. Yes, I have had to escort people out of my office. Not fun. And in case you haven't noticed, we're now in the information age, the new millennium, the new economy. And if it can be done remotely, it is being done. I love to meet new people. That's super fun. But it's not really necessary anymore. The truth is, the only thing I can do in a real live session that I can't do remotely is shake your hand. Oh, and yes, spread viruses. Thus, I'm creating these tapes to accompany the virtual counseling that has all of a sudden been sprung upon us here in the spring of 2020 with the pandemic we're experiencing. So what do you say? Are you ready to do extraordinary work to realize an extraordinary marriage? If so, let's get started. If not, then hang on to your normal marriage, and I wish you the best.